So we were discussing the Tosfos here on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph. The Ramasu Krovim, we'll try to advance on that, and then we'll talk about Knas a little bit. These are very, very big topics, but we're interested also in moving a little bit forward in the parak, so we'll try to cut down some of the discussion. But the context was as follows. The Mishnah had said that if you have two kitei edim, if you have two groups of witnesses, each of which is able to resolve this particular case, that their testimony would be effective in winning the case. So the Mishnah says that if each kat denied knowledge, and they were, of course, it was a false denial, as they really did know, so each one would be liable for korban shvuas eidos. Each one would have to bring a korban once it was established that in fact they lied and they did know testimony that could have won the case for the tovei. So as we discussed, the Mishnah says, how can that be? This is the bottom of Lamed Beis on Beis. We've seen it already. So the Gemara says, Bishlam Shnia Tischayim. The Kafra La Rishona, the first one is already denied knowledge, and therefore by the time you get to the second kat, they're the only solution that's, you know, that's left. And therefore everything rides on their honesty, and therefore their suppression of testimony, their refusal to be forthcoming and to testify, you know, is exclusively responsible for the loss, and therefore they bring a korban. But Ela Rishona Amai, why did the first kat also responsible for a korban? After all, Hakaima Shnia, when they lie, right, it's not all over. There's still the possibility that the remaining kat will save the day, and therefore that lack of exclusive causal factor should have also exempted them from the korban. That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara came up with this idea. So the Gemara says, well, obviously, since this Mishnah, since the law that is articulated in the Mishnah doesn't seem to conform to the logic of the law here as we know it, so it must be that the circumstances are unusual. In other words, there must be things happening in this case that are not written in the text, but we can surmise that this must be what's happening. In other words, we're reconstructing, we're projecting based on the law backwards. What we're saying is that it must be that at the time when the first kat was being asked to testify, that they were the only thing standing between victory and defeat in the case. Just that later on, the second kat, right, becomes kosher, and that's what we mean. There are two kite edim in retrospect, and yet we go by the moment, by the time of the tviya, and if at the time of the tviya the first kat were the only game in time, and then the chiddush is, even if it could have been anticipated at that moment, that first tviya moment, that there would end up being a second solution, because the krovin min shoseim goes to sos. The only reason that the kat shnia doesn't exist when the tviya is made to the kat rishona is because they're related through their wives, but both of the wives are deathly ill. And therefore, you can anticipate that at some point they will become Edim Sheirim. And nonetheless, since formally there was only one Kat at the time, even though you could anticipate that there would be another one before long, right, the formal legal status is determined by the present reality, not by any kind of anticipation. And therefore, Kat Rishona is Chayim Korban. Then when the Kat Shnia becomes Sheira, and they're the only game in time, they become Chayiv HaKorban. So even though all of this is not explicated in the Mishnah, it becomes, I guess, legally implicit because otherwise the ruling doesn't make any sense. That's what the Gemara says. Then the Bali Tosis added a new wrinkle, let's say, or an additional wrinkle, and they say Krovim Minishal say, we talked already about the whole problem of Kfiras Varim Bialma and the relationship between Sapikadon, that we finished with. But the second Tosis adds that Kagon Shabashas Riya Saedus Hayu Rikokim the Beinan Tchilas of Asofa the Kashrus Kinarminim Aperek Yesh Nochrim. So the Tosa says, you think the case is complicated, you know, namely, instead of this being two kitaid in both of them are ksherim, which is, you would have thought that Mishnah's talking about, but based on, again, the logic of the law, it must be that it's talking about a case where only one was kosher at a time because they were brothers-in-law, they were related. So you should know, says Tosas, there had to be another implicit special circumstance, and that is that when they both kitaid, right, when they witnessed this event, they were both chairs. Meaning the kak that became brothers-in-law and then later, you know, became not brothers-in-law, apparently were not brothers-in-law to begin with at the Shasari. In other words, they were Rechokim and therefore Ksherim. Then at the time of Tviya Rishona, they were brothers-in-law and therefore Psulim. And then at the time of the Tviya Shnia, they were no longer brothers-in-law and they were Ksherim. Why is this true? Because the Gemara says in Bava Basra that we have a rule based on maybe Psukim, maybe on the Pasuk of Shuas Eidos actually, Behu Eid or Ra Yada. So at least that's what the Rashbam kind of suggests. We'll talk about that in a minute. Which says that you need Tchilas of Asofa Bekatras, that Eidim need to be Ksherim, and a Kat needs to be Kshera, Bishas Re'ia, and Bishas Hagada. Then if it's puzzle or their puzzle in between, that's not so terrible. They don't need to be kosher every minute, you know, from the time of Re'iyah through the time of Haggadah, but at the critical junctures of Re'iyah and Haggadah, they need to be Eidim Ksherim. The Gemara there develops the concept. They have exactly this kind of a case. Let's say you have Eidim who are Rechokim and then Krovim and then Rechokim again. The answer is if they're Rechokim b'shas Riya and Haggadah, that's fine. If they're Rechokim b'shas Haggadah, but they were Krovim b'shas Riya, that would be a problem. The Gemara speaks about Suma, they speak about a Rasha, right? They have this principle, they call it Be'inan Tchiloso v'sofo b'katras. You need the beginning and the end of the process, namely the Riya, witnessing the event, and Haggadah, right? The formal testimony in Besdin that they be at a time when they're kshem. Okay, so that's how we know that this case is that complicated, additional complexity. But then Tosa says, but if that is true, then we have a problem with the Gemara in Cheskas Abatim, in Bava Basra. Because the Gemara there says, how the Cheskas Abatim, the Bnei Ir Shenignav Sefer Torah Shalahan, you have a Bnei Ir, you have the members of a community or a city, and their Sefer Torah was stolen. Okay, we tracked down the perpetrator, and now we're going to put him on trial. And the question is, who can you know, be involved, I'll say it carefully, in this process? After all, everybody is an interested party, because the entire city, all the citizens of the town are part owners of the stolen goods. They're all, in one way or another, the Nignav. So who's going to take part in the judicial process to bring him to justice, right, when this seems to be psul nogeya b'davar, right, is something that should have disqualified. So the Gemara says, well, what's the big deal? Vili salku betre minayu vili daini. Why don't you take two of the members of the community, right, and extricate them from their negius, from their interested involvement. In other words, let two of the people of the town or the shul or whatever the case may be, let them renounce their financial stake in the Sefer Torah, so that at this point there's no longer in the category of Nogei Abedavar. And if they're not Nogei Abedavar, then it's fine. They can function in the judicial. I'm saying in the judicial system carefully, because we'll see in a moment there's a big machlokas or rishonim. Are we talking about Dayanim, or are we talking about Eden. The language of the Gemara is mixed. It says, V'lesalku beitrei minayu, let two of them give up their stake. V'lesalku means they should walk away, meaning walk away from their ownership. V'lidaini, means to deal with it, but it also means to be judges in the case. So are we talking about judges, in which case it's strange that we mention two? Or are we talking about Edim, and we don't really mean Lidaini, we mean to judge, to be involved in the case, to be part of the Din Torah. So the question is, what happened to the rule of Tchilas Vesofa Bekashrus, right? If there's really a requirement that Edim, Bikshirim, not only Bishas Hagada, which is obvious, but also Bishas Re'ia, right? So if these people were owners of the Sefer Torah, the Shas Re'ia is the moment of the Geneva, right? So they witnessed this theft, right? And at that time they were psulim, because they were Nogeya B'davar. So what benefit is there of a Lisalki Minayu? That the Shas Hagada, they're Ksherim, but they weren't Ksherim B'Shas Re'ia. We just said that you need Tchilas Himself of Bekashrus. So Tosa says, Ein L'damos Psul D'machmas Shanogim Be'edus the psul de kurva or the sharp psulim, that you cannot compare the psul of nogea be'edus and the psul of kurva or other psulim. It sounds like the exception here is nogea bedavar. The rule is other psulim. So what's the difference between nogea bedavar and other psulim? So Tosis and Balmaster is a little more explicit about it. Seems to be a little more explicit. And mentions that, Nogea B'davar is connected to the monetary aspect, as opposed to a kind of psul haguf, more of a formal and personal exclusion, like a Karov or a Russia or a Summa, somebody who, by virtue of his status, for one reason or another, is excluded. So it sounds like Tosis here, and especially in Bava Basra, is making an important distinction between two types of psulim, nogea b'davar and shar psulim. And it sounds like, at least Tosafot Bava Basra, and probably Tosafot here as well, are saying that nogea b'davar is not a typical psul. Let's call it pashtus of a Tosafot saying, although I can't prove it, but we'll see in a moment that other people say it, is that nogea b'davar isn't really a formal psul. Nogea b'davar is a practical chashash sheker. This is a very important idea. So let me just take a step back, and then just going to develop very briefly some of the positions here. But as I say, it's a much bigger topic.
If we're talking about Kayanim, then
we'll get to it.
That would
be a good answer, right? That would answer the question. So that's what we'll see in a moment. Tosa Nida and Hagos Maimonios and the Yad Ramah, they all take that position. We'll see in a couple of minutes. Okay, so let's take a step back just for a second, and let me make the following point. Yeah.
Can a Dayan be Nogea B'davar at Shas Re'ia?
So that's really what was just said, and that is that the problem of Tchilas Vesofa Bekashrus is based on V'hu Eido Ro Yada. It appears in Bava Basra on Daf Kuf Chav Ches, in the context of psule edus. As far as we know, there is no such parallel requirement in din. So if we're talking about, in the Gemara Bava Basra, dayanim, even though it says two, right, if it does say daini, then maybe that's a good answer to the question. We'll see, Tosa Nida, the Ramah, the Rabbi Yona, the Agos Mamunia, there's a whole group of Rishonim that take that position. We'll see in just a minute. Okay. But before we do that, I just want to take a step back for a second to make the following point, and that is that there's no dearth of makoros, sources, for the psule edus, right? People who are excluded or are disqualified, from giving testimony, typically speaking, we know why they're disqualified. We know what the categories are. We know what the source is. Sometimes we can debate about the legal character, the nature of the psul, right? But pretty much the designation and the makor, the source, are pretty you know, pretty easy to track down. Earlier in the year we spoke about Nashim, right, why women are exempt, and Avadim, right, and right, because that Mishnah says, Shmuel says, "Dis nehegas pan Nashim v'lo b'Nashim." Our Gemara itself says, you know, how do you know the Nashim are excluded from Eidah? So, Amdu Shnei Anashim B'din, you know, is that talking about Bal Davar? Is that talking about Eidim? The Rambam has a different Makar, but he has a clear Makar, right? The Gemara in Bava Kamma, which we discussed at the time, talks about Eved Knani, and so on and so forth. The Gemaras in Sanhedrin are very clear, you know, about Eilu's a Mishnah called Elohein HaKrovim, right, in which all the different relatives are delineated, and then, you know, the whole discussion, you know, how to, what's the, you know, what configurations are disqualified and what are not, you know, Rishon B'Rishon and Rishon B'Sheni and Sheni B'Sheni and Shlishi B'Rishon. There's a whole, like, hierarchy of how you measure Krovim, right, and where you draw the line. And, you know, it's come up. We've talked, I remember last year we talked about it a little bit because we were talking about Bnei Banim Kebanim, we were talking about grandchildren and grandparents, right, and whether or not there's a generation gap or not. I was trying to show that, you know, for some things, you know, both we find sometimes Bnei Banim Kebanim, you know, or Abba da Abba is Ka'aba. Sometimes we distinguish between those two. In some areas of halakha, we consider, you know, grandparents like parents and children, grandchildren like children. Other times we consider it to be the bigger gap, you know, of that. And I was trying to show that, you know, halakha has a very distinctive and complex and also very compelling philosophy about family structure, which, you know, can be, in my opinion, explicated, you know, with great care from things like Psulei Kurva and Yerusha, and the Chiyuv of Chinuch, and so on and so forth. I mean, if you take a bunch of areas in Halacha where this question comes up, not just grandparents and grandchildren, that too, but the whole family structure, in-law children, and stepchildren, and cousins, and uncles, and brothers, and, right, how it all works, and of course wives, and all of that. But there's a very, you know, again, you can look at each case very narrowly, and that's very rich and rewarding as well. But if you look at the grand, you know, picture, so there are, you know, very interesting perspectives on family relations and family structure. Okay, so the point is, so we don't just have the Mishnah and the myriad of details of Psulei Kurva. We have a Mokar. The Sugya in Sanhedrin derives it from Psukim. And then Yerushalmi has different Psukim, but it's clear. Rishayim, right, people who are unsavory and untrustworthy, or Avaryanim, whatever you want to call them, are Pasulyedas. It's another Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Elohein HaRishayim, right? And again, you have Psukim, you know, Eid Hamas, you know, Russia, Vahim Binakos HaRasha, you have different psukim, and then there's debates about, you know, how far you go, you know, in some of the Russia Dukhamas, or regular Russia, you need to be Chayv Malkus, or maybe, you know, any kind of Chamas Mamoni without Malkus. The Rambam has a two-tiered position on Psule Eidos Russia. The point is, again, you have psukim, and it's pretty clear. The Rambam in Perek Tes, or Tilchas Eidos, again, when we talked about Avadim and Chershota Bekatan and Nashim and so on earlier in the year, we read from that Rambam, right? The Rambam has nine categories of psulim. Okay, and he lists them. One of the nine is Nogea B'Davar, but you'll not find an explicit source for Nogea B'Davar in the Babli and the Yerushalmi. It's very strange, right? It's a clear category of psul, documented in the Gemara. Numerous Gemaras in Bava Basra and Sanhedrin in particular speak about v'hanogea be'edusu, right? That nogea be'edus, somebody who has an interest, a financial interest in the case, is disqualified. But you don't have a Gemara that says Minalan or that provides us with a Makar for the Psul of Nogeya Bedavar. And the question is, you know, what to do with that? Why is Manishtana, you know, Nogeya Be'edus, which is Pasul, Mi Rasha, Mi Karov, Mi, you know, all the other Psul. At minimum, that's a question to ask. You might find a very good answer. I'm going to suggest a couple. I'm not saying they're good, but I'll suggest a few obvious answers. But it's certainly a question that needs to be addressed. Okay. Obviously, the absence of a makar becomes more intriguing, you know, when there are also, if there are also, other characteristic differences between the psul of Nogeya and other psulim. And we'll just take a very brief survey, and some of the comes up here, obviously, with regard to the reason that we're talking about it now is because this is an important tosis in Shas, you know, that makes this distinction with regard to the din of Tchilosa v'sofa b'kashrus, right? But there could be other differences too, as we'll say. For example, I'll just mention a couple, and we'll document it a little bit. Mishnah says in Makos, right, Nimsa echad mehem karav apasol, eidu shabat l'mitzasa bat l'kula, Mishnah davav amud aleph, very well known, right? If you have a karov, a relative, or a pasol, somebody who's a rasha, and he's part of the kat, he's part of the group, even if you have 100 in the group, 3 in the group, if you have 2 in the group and 1 is pasol, that's obvious, because you need 2 eidim, so you don't have 2 eidim. But let's say you have 3, or 50, or 53, or 52. It doesn't matter. I mean, anything beyond the number 3 and above. So the point is, you don't really need, you know, the extra eidim. Let's say you have 2 kosher eidim, you know, and then you have some psulim who you know, also are part of the kat, whatever that means to be part of the kat. I'm not going to discuss that right now. That's a debate. You know, is that determined by the eidim? Is that determined by the baldavar? Is that determined by objective circumstances? By things that happen b'shas riyah, b'shas agada, either or both, right? A topic, as you can see, not for now. But whatever it is, whatever defines the kat, the point is that if you have 2+, and then you have problem ones, you know, what should be the issue? It's a very mechudash halacha, which we derive from the adrasha, you know, that edus shabat l'mitzasa bat l'kula. So it can be 3, the third, ruins the other 2. It can be 100, and the 100th ruins the other 99. You know, assuming they're all part of a kat. It's a very remarkable halacha. Okay. So the din is that nimsa echadim karav apasol, edus shabat l'mitzasa bat l'kula. That's the phrase that is used in the Mishnah and Makos. Nim Sachamem Karov or Pasol. A Rasha, Psul Rasha, right, or a Karov. Those are the ones that we know about. What about Nogeya Bedavar? Is a Nogeya Bedavar also create a situation of Eidah Shabbat Matasa Bat Lakula? So that's a discussion, and it's the Tshuva of the Rivash, the Mishnah Lamelech in Parakei of Hilchos Eidos, quotes it and other Makoros. That discuss this question. They're not sure. They're not sure where Nogeya stands. You know, maybe it's different than Karov and Pasul. Another example, right? There's a debate among the Rishonim, which we'll also discuss soon, about what we call Nogeya Lechova. Right? Let's say a person has a financial interest in a case, and he wants to testify. But he wants to testify to his detriment, not to his benefit. He's an honest guy, right? And he wants to testify and tell the truth as he knows it in this case, even though he's going to be financially damaged by that truth, right? Does it make a difference? Now, again, if you're talking about a Karov or a Russia, right? I mean, we don't look at it in terms of Chova and Skus. But let's say it would be Lechova and Skus. It wouldn't make a difference. Like, Karov is a good example. Like, if I want to testify against my brother, my father, my son, my wife, right? Does that in any way change the equation? The answer is no. Somebody who's puzzled midin Karov is puzzled bein Lechova. And the same is true with regard to, you know, a Russia, right? We don't care what side of that. Again, Russia, you might say it's neutral if he's not related to the people or the events. Let's assume you could take, you could create a Hekatimtsi where somehow, you know, the content of his testimony might make a difference, right, in terms of credibility or something like that. It doesn't matter, because the Russia is Pasul, it's a Psul Gavra, and the idea of Liskus, Lachova, it just doesn't really register. So when it comes to Nogea, we have a debate. And numerous other issues as well. So the fact that there's no Makar, no obvious Makar, and the fact that there are all these discussions, right, some in the Rishonim and some in the Poskim, about the possibility that Nogea, right, in numerous areas might be distinctive or might be an exception to rules that apply to other psileidos, right, these two points, you know, kind of converge a little bit. They make you wonder, right, what is Nogea all about? So let's get back to the first question for just a minute. How could it be that Nogea is Pasileidos, Minat Torah, and it doesn't have a Makar? How do we explain that phenomenon? Especially in light of the fact that all other Psileidos that we know of do have a Makar. So the answer, probably, broadly speaking, there are two answers. I mean, there are three possibilities, broadly speaking, and two answers to this question, right? As a phenomenon, in other words. One answer is, it just looks like there's no Makar, but there really is a Makar. What does that mean? The answer is that what it means is that Nogea is not a separate or an independent psul. It's subsumed, right, under some other category. Okay? What other category would it be subsumed under? What candidates are there even for that? So the Yad Ramah, and a little bit Rabbeinu Yonah, this especially became associated with the Lavush, who wrote a sefer called Ir Shushan, right? He wrote Sfarim, you know, in the Megillas Esther, you know, jargon mode, like, you know, Levush Mordechai, you know, Ir Shushan, you know, and so on and so forth. So he is strongly associated in the world of the Shulchan Aruch with the idea that a Nogea B'davar is a Karov Li'atzmo. His problem is that he's like, if you're related to your brother and to your son and to your wife and to your father, right, then you're certainly also related to yourself. You could say that that's ridiculous. You're not related to yourself. You are yourself, right? So the relationship is so close that it's not relationship. It's an identity, right? You could be so related to yourself that you're not really related. But if you can get past that, I guess, then you're the first person you're related to is yourself. And that was the formulation that we find. So some of the Rishonim and some of the Poskim take the view, again, they aren't, as far as I know, no one asks this question and answers it in the way. No one ever, I'm not familiar with anybody who said, how come there's no Makar for Nogea B'davar? Although there must be that somebody asks it. I mean, it occurred to me. It's obviously is a way to highlight some of the discrepancies between and perspectives about them. So I'm sure other people, I'm not aware who else asked this question, but essentially the Rishonim and Poskim do use the expression about Nogea B'davar and treat it as if he's a Karov Li'atzmo. That would explain, you want to know where the Makar is? It's the same Makar as Korva. If you're even more of a Karov, then even more so. Right? Okay. That's one possibility. If that's the case, then what you would want to do in Nogea, pretty much, that would be your paradigm. You would want to plug it in, right, to the dinim of Karov. Now again, because this is a little bit of a different kind of a Karov, namely not to its, to a separate or distinct party, but a Karov to yourself, and maybe that, you know, if that isn't contradictory and therefore ruin the whole formulation, it still might temper it a little bit. Instead of making it the most intense korva, it also may just make it the most intense and also the most unusual, let's say, korva, as we'll explain. But all things being equal, you should be treating Nogea B'davar as a psul korva, And, for example, when Tosas here is pointing out that there's a dinim tkilos of sofa bakashrus and wondering about it with regard to nogeya b'davar, so this should be, you know, this should be a very serious problem, you know, if nogeya is a karav liatzma. Because that's certainly one of the prominent cases of tkilos of sofa bakashrus issue in Bava Basra. Right? Okay. That's one possibility.
It wouldn't work for Lechova, though.
I'm sorry?
It wouldn't work Lechova.
Then it's also, again, on all things being equal, no gay should be a psul Lechova as well, which is the debate.
Lechova, but he's not Korah Blasphemy, then. He's working against himself.
Right. Right, but he is still, that's what I'm saying, so it might be tempered a little bit, that's kind of what I was referring to. The other way, the other side of that argument is, If we're really serious about the model of Korva, so you know he is objective Korv Liatzmo, no matter what he says about the case, and therefore it's like being made against your brother or against your father or against your son or against your wife, right? We'll see. Yeah.
What about the Das Baldin? What's the effect of Das Baldin if he's motivated?
Well, Das Baldin typically is something that applies to a Baldava. Not to an aid. But we'll get to...
It doesn't work from aids from... Like, is there not an aids component there?
Hodas Baldin is Kimea Aidin Dami. Meaning when a Baldin admits something, then... Are you asking about Nogea Lechova?
If he's a Karov, then does it affect...
Let me say this. Hodas Baldin Kimea Aidin Dami as a Baldavar, right... Is something that in Dine Mamanus is effective, and the question is how exactly does it work? Right. So there are some who think that Hodas Baldin Kemedim Dami works as a kind of ischaibus, right? Meaning it's Dine Mamanus. You know, if you want to sign over your fortune or part of your fortune, you know, Tavolach Habracha, you can do that. If you want to do it through the myth or the narrative of saying that this and this happened when we don't necessarily believe you that it did, but it's something that obligates you, instead of saying, I want to give you $1,000 present, you want to make it, you don't want to create a mythic, you know, scenario of how you really owe the person $1,000 and we're going to pretend that we believe you. That's how some people understand how Das Baldin Kemedim Dami, as a matana or his chayus. The Ksos in Simin Lamed Daled and elsewhere happens to think that Hodas Baldin Kemedim Dami is itself a form of eidos. It's just about personal eidos. For him, it's like eidos lechova, which is not burdened by the requirement of shnayim or by the psul of karav liatzmo. That's the Ksos's analysis of, so you're right, of Hodas Baldin Kemedim Dami. But that doesn't require two. That's not, you know, working as a together with another aid and a kat. That's when Betoras Baldavar, the Baldavar, in other words, and something that not Chav Lachrini, it only affects you, right? You, it's like in your world, you know, we believe you as aid. But that's a kind of a different, not everybody agrees with Xos. With Xos, it's an interesting overlap from this perspective. Okay, so that's one perspective. The other perspective, yeah.
When you have a korov, that's an objective criteria.
Right.
Where two people can't dispute it.
You mean that people are related as objective?
Yeah, I mean, if someone is a father-son, that's it.
Correct.
But when you have no gay or dover, that's in the eyes of the ball.
Well, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. Is it in the eyes of the beholder or the dayan? It has to be based on a certain objective threshold. The question is how far is that threshold a formalistic one and is it flexible? We'll talk about that very briefly too. I think you're right. I mean, you're asking, what is the criterion? How involved, how much of a benefit or an interest do you have to have? How, you know, primary or secondary or distant or possible as opposed to actual? These are all debated about Nogeya v'Davar. Each one of these questions. I'm going to touch on one or two just to show you very quickly. I don't want to get too enmeshed. But since you asked in particular, I'll mention a couple. That's a good point. Okay. So, one possibility to do the carve the Atzma, I'll show you the formulation of that in just a second. The second possibility is that the reason you don't have a makar is because you don't need a makar, not because it's subsumed under other things, but because it's a different kind of psul. That the psul here is chashas sheker. In other words, that the basis for believing, this is something we've spoken about all year, it's really part of the Chovas Haggadah topic, and the nemanus that Eidos has, that it's treated almost like facts, right? Kat Eidim is an uvda in halacha, like it's a fact, until it's contradicted. Even though, again, as I've said many times, even this year, right? Even though, let's say we have an algorithm or whatever we have, you know, we have a studies, you know, about human nature or a particular society. Let's say we could, you know, the data is unequivocal. 3.7, percent of people, you know, who give testimony are lying. They're pathological about it, they lie. Or maybe it's not 3.7, I mean, it's a number, of course. It's, 12.3, or it's less, or it's somewhere in between. It doesn't really matter. 7.2. Okay? And you know, every society, or this society, you know, there's a small, you know, group of people that lie. The halakha doesn't care. Jose, they don't care. If it was too big, maybe they would care. But basically, al pidin, every Jew has cheskas kashrus. That's what we discussed, right? So it's shnayim edim until we know otherwise are facts. Even though we know that sometimes what we call facts in X percentage of those cases are false. Doesn't matter legally. Cheskas kashrus. I believe it's a moral, it's a Kedushas Yisrael thing, to be honest, and it's an optimism and an idealism thing. But about Kedushas Yisrael, that's my strong conclusion and instinct, both. Okay. The point is that when that gets, that's based on the assumption, you know, that people have no reason to lie. Does that perspective, this is like an interesting question, I think, theologically and philosophically and intellectually. How do you look at chashas sheker, right, in light of that? Right, and here you could take two opposite perspectives. You could say, well, if we're ignoring, you know, that small percentage, we're not saying about Eidos that it's 95 or 97% accurate. The way we're treating it, I'm talking about. We all know the math. We all did the actuarial work. So whatever the number is, it is. But we're not saying, oh, okay, so every time two end come to court, you know, that's the percentage of likelihood it's true. And that's enough. We're not saying that. We're really saying it's 100% true until the 5.7% cases we know it's not. Right? And that's not semantics. That's a very different perspective. Oh. So now, does that include also negius? Is that a reason to say, well, somebody's an ogea, but we don't believe you lie because we're already working with this exaggerated notion of cheskas kashrus based on Kedushas Yisrael and so on, and kol Yisrael Raven, whatever you want to call it, and kol olam nizdazeya, you know, and so on. So one could take the position that even a nogeya b'davar can't really take seriously chashas sheker per se, like in the case, you know, we might say, oh, people who are, it's a psul gavra, right? But it can't really be a chashas sheker because that's a contradiction to the foundation of what Eidos is all about. Or you could say the opposite. The only reason we're able to be so confident, you know, this projection of 100%, you know, factual status is because, you know, there's no reason for people to be lying, and therefore their decency, and therefore we rely on their dispassion, their detachment, their honesty. But once we know, you know, that this isn't the larger population, but that somebody who has a reason, right, to lie, or to be less than objective, less than detached, then maybe the best way to protect you know, the 100% confidence, you know, in Cheskes Kashrus is also to be, you know, to bend over backwards and to eliminate anybody who has any kind of shemitz of an interest to lie. I could see it going either way. Right? But that's a tricky question. But the second that you admit that there is something called shasheker, what you might say, that's not a psul gavra, right? It's a din in, mostly, in Kabbalah's Eidos. We won't accept testimony which is tainted in terms of the Cheskes Kashrus issue. Even though there's no, the man's not puzzled, he's not a Russia, he's not a Karov, right? We just can't, with the same 100% confidence, apply the rule of Cheskes Kashrus. I'm just giving you also, at the same time, another reason why, like, why would people not want, just like I said before, I was trying to explain, you know, there's no greater Karov than you are to yourself. Or maybe, you know, the idea of being Karov to yourself is just ridiculous. You know, it's a notion about the relationship of distinct people. And so I'm saying now as well, right? There's a very good reason to think that Nogei Bedavar is Kshas Sheker, and there's another, and that it's very different, and therefore it doesn't need a Makar. It's built into what Cheskes Kashrus is all about, but doesn't apply here. Or that whole story is so strong that this cannot be the explanation for Nogei. Okay. But that would explain Misvara, and it would also explain discrepancies. The third way of looking at it is a little bit what Adam was getting at, I think, but not so much chashash sheker as much as somebody who's just not in the process at all. To use the language of the Rimagash, which we're going to read inside in just a second, and that is the idea that there is something called dayanim in the system. There's something called Edim, which is what we're talking about right now. And then there's a third group in the court system called Balei Dvarim, meaning the litigants. Right? And, you know, these three categories, Edim, Dayanim, and Balei Dinim, are distinct. They're all important to the court process, but everybody has their own function. Earlier in the year, we were speaking about who stands and who sits, right? Dayanim, Edim, Gam Dushnei Nashim Bedin, Balei Dinim. Right? The relationship between Edim and Dayanim has a long history, right? Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. There are different explanations of why that is, right? But you're not typically, there are different shitas what it means also. The classic meaning is that he can't wear two hats. He can't be an Eid and a Dayan at the same time, right? By the same token, you can't be a Baldabar and an Eid or a Dayan at the same time. Because a Baldabar is, you know, is the party whose fate is being decided. He's not the objective evidence, and he's not the objective decisors or evaluators of the case. Now, the way this is explained by some Rishonim is also based on the Gemara Masechet Makos and Avav Min Aleph, where the Gemara says, at one point, Elameyata, Horog Yatzil, Nerog Yatzil, if there's a din of Eidos Shebatla Mitzasa Batla Kula, namely, that if somebody, you know, is attached to the kat, they can undermine the kat even if you don't need them to be a kosher aid. You have three aidim, right? You only need two. The third one is pasul, Eidos Shebatla Mitzasa Batla Kula. So the Gemara says, so Elameyata, if that's true, then Horog Yatzil, Nerog Yatzil, what about the victim? Or what about the perpetrator? He's there when the event takes place. He's possibly Eidos. He can't come to court and testify. So let that be Eidos Shabbat Mitzasa Bat Lakula. It's an interesting question, right? So the Gemara says, no. Al pishtai meidim o shosh enim yakum davar, b'mekai me davar akosav medaber. So what does that mean? So the way the Ravid understood it, and earlier the Rimigash, is that such a technical? Don't ask me klatzkashes, you know. It's a very important principle. What's the principle? The principle is that Edom are mekai me davar. They are not litigants in the case. They're mekai me davar. They're what determine what, you know, what the law will be. They're not the people who are affected by the ruling. There's something called Bali Dvarim, and there's something called Edim. The advantage of this approach is, and it's interesting, these three approaches overlap in part each other in different ways. Like, they don't all, you know, the three, two of them don't go together more than the third, no matter which one you pick, depending on what issue you're asking. So a Baldavar, for example, as the Rimigash and Raivin understand it, is somebody who is mufka, formally excluded from Aedus. If you're defined as a Baldavar, then you can't be an Aed. But you're not an Aed puzzle. You're just not an Aed. So that's a formalistic statement. It's a statement about the division of status in the court system, right? On the other hand, it doesn't belong to the world of Psule Aedus. And there'll be nafkamina. So first I want to document this, and then I just want to show some of the nafkamina. It seems like
important how much of a...
Yeah. I mean, again, then the question, just like... But that's a question in Nogea in general, but it might affect that question in Nogea. Now, it's to be a Bal Davar, right, who is mufka mi'edus, because he's not in the category of Mekaime Davar, but on the contrary, the person who's affected by it, which I think what you're asking is, how much does he have to be affected... A primary party, a secondary party, some extraneous, you know, financial benefit, or an actor, even if he's a minor actor in the case, the owner of the action, you know, who's financially, like you own a shore and your shore murders. Are you the Baldavar? More or less than some event took place and you have a remote financial repercussion, right? So, exactly. How do you define, or where do you draw the line in what is considered a Baldav? Yeah?
Yeah, but you say that they're very separate. Like, an Aed can't be a Dayan, Dayan can be an Aed, but a Baldavar can remove himself from being a Baldavar and be an Aed, like the case in the Sefer Torah. So they can...
Maybe that's the point, but not at the same time, right? Right, so one of the things we're testing... So let's go back now to our original question. Which is, Tosis points out here, and above Basra, and in Nida, these are three places in Shas where Tosis asks this question, that while there seems to be a rule of Tchilosa v'sofa b'kashrus, namely that Edim need to be Ksherim b'shas Ria and b'shas Agada, it's not enough that they're Ksherim only b'shas Agada, that doesn't seem necessary, or there seems to be a challenge to that concept. It applies to Kurva, it applies to Russia, it applies to Summa. It doesn't seem to necessarily apply to Nogea B'Davar. And the question is, why? So we find three answers to this question in the Rishon. The first answer is the answer of Tosin Bava Basra and Tosin Shavuos that we read. Basically, the way I understand it, although I'm 100% sure about Tosin Shavuos, and even Tosin Bava Basra, if you want to be stubborn, you could say he has something a little different in mind, but what it sounds like, certainly... is that what Tosa is saying is that there are two types of psul eidus. Nogea is psul eidus, but it's not a psul gavra. It's a psul based on chashash sheker. And the din of tchilosa v'sofa b'kashrus applies only to psule gavra, personal exclusions, not to psulim that are based on the inability, right, for Bezdin to be makabel eidus because you don't have full confidence in the cheskas kashrus or in the truth of what they're being makabel. So that we don't apply to the tchilos of sof b'kashrus in psule gavra, not in chashash sheker, and that's why nogea is an exception. That is the answer of Tosas b'Basra, seemingly in Tosas and Shulis. However, if you look at Tosas in Nida. Okay, so now let's look in our Mar Makomos. Let's look at page 2. Okay, here we go. So the Mishnah says in Nida. I made a mistake here. It's the wrong Mishnah. It doesn't matter. Look at the Tosas though. Yeah, the Mishnah that I wanted to record is the Mishnah Nida discusses the relationship between psule dayan and psule edus. We talked about this earlier in the year. We talked about Nashim and Devorah, right? So the Mishnah basically says it's a hierarchy. Whoever is pasul le'edus is certainly pasul le'din. But whoever is pasul le'din is not necessarily pasul le'edus. In other words, the standards are higher to be a judge than they are to be an aid. That's why Tosu was bothered by the women issue, because it's clear that women are psulos le'edus, v'abdushen Nashim bedin. That's our Gemara and Shuas, Naflamit explicit. And the question is, what's the status of Devora, right? Was she really a shofetes or not? And most of Bali Tosis conclude that she was not, and they have different explanations of how she functioned in terms of her role. Okay. So anyway, that is the same Mishnah. So regarding that Mishnah of Dayan and Aid, the question is as follows. What about Tchilas of Sofa Bekashras? Right? Does that apply to Dayan and to Aid? If it's true that whatever standards, right, undermine Edim, also undermine Dayanim, right? So then you should apply the new Tzchala to itself of Akashas too. So Tosis asks the following question. Look at line number 33. Talking about a blind person, he knew testimony when he was, you know, he had sight. Vinistama, pasul. Okay, that's he wasn't a bishas hagada. Okay, vimtoma the perkeskas abatim the parech for the salka betray minayu v'ledainu. Same Gemara that they're asking about the Sefer Torah. The rule is that if you're apostle to Shasriya, you're apostle. So how come in Baba Basra they said, renounce your financial, you know, ownership or your chelek, and then you can be effective? The sofa bekashras. The chi tema, says Tosas, ladun kosher tvei, but none, call it kosher ladun. What will you say? That the diuk is on the word vilidaini, meaning edim, even if they're no geya, are pasul, even after siluk, because it's a violation of tchilas of asofo bekashrus. The Gemara, Kaskas Abatim, wasn't looking for edim. They're looking for dayanim. Right? Vilisalku, vili. Why did it say betray and not beklasa? Okay, good question. Maybe the whole like Shmuel Shtaim Shadon Dinayim Din, right? There could be other explanations. So, Tosis says that sounds like a good answer, but doesn't it contradict the rule that the standards of Dayanus are higher than the standards of Edus? Says Tosis, V'yeshomer demasisim ayir bilhaba, kola koshul adun, lahaba, koshul ahoyd, mashayirim, mikanu lahaba. Meaning the din of tchilas of sofa bekashrus is a special din in Edus. You're not talking about standards. It's not a standard of a person. It's just a circumstance of, you know, what his status was at the moment of the event. Another way to say this would be, we shouldn't care about the status of a dayan at the time of the event, right? Because he's not testifying. You know, we need his judgment and his detachment and his wisdom and his, you know, experience and his knowledge and his integrity, you know, so that at the time of the court case, as long as he's somebody who is completely beyond reproach at that moment, then that's fine. Right? What do we care about what his status was in the past, at the moment of the Re'iyah? Oh. So Tosis basically in Nida is suggesting, by implication, that Nogea B'davar, like Karov, and like Suma, and like Rasha, has the din of Tzchilas of Sofa Bekashrus against Tosas and Baal Basra and Tosas and Shulchan. Now, that Gosra Munio says the same thing, as do other Rishon. There are still two ways to understand this. One is that the reason Tosas comes to this conclusion is because they don't think Nogea B'davar is fundamentally different than any other psul. And on the contrary, the way, as we'll see in a moment, the Ramah says it, is that He's a Karo. What is Nogam B'Davar? He's a Karo of Liatzmo. So of course, the din of Tzvasov Sofu B'Kashus applies to him, because it applies to a Karov. He's a Karov. Right? Is that the explanation? That's certainly what the Rama seems to say. We'll get that in a second. There's another possible explanation. And that is, when it comes to other issues, there still could be a discrepancy between Nogam B'Davar and Karov or other Psulim. Right? But maybe the din of Tchilasav Sofa B'Kashrus is something that applies across the board, notwithstanding other differences. Now, I don't have to say that Nogeya is Bidin Karov in order to explain that it's not different with regard to Tchilasav Sofa B'Kashrus. All I need to say is that Tchilasav Sofa B'Kashrus has no exceptions. It applies not only to Psule Gavra, but even to Chashashay Sheker. Okay.
Why
so where do we find this,
why,
actually?
Why don't you just suggest that Tchilas of the Kasher is over with the Kasher, because just like he could have been Messiah himself now, he could have been Messiah himself at the time of the Wii also. He could have divorced himself from the Sefer Torah at the time of the event.
But he didn't. But he didn't. I mean, he was still possible. No, I understand, but he was still possible.
By Korov, you can't divorce yourself. You know, if you're Korov now, you're Korov then too.
But you're trying to explain why it's different.
Pardon?
You're trying to explain why it's different.
Yeah,
but I'm saying Tosin Nidad thinks it's the same. So what you're explaining is another explanation for maybe for Tosis and... in Shuas. Okay. Yeah. I'm saying simple Pshat of Tosin Bel Basra, which is a little more explicit than Tosin Shuas, is that the difference is between a Psul Gavra and a Chashash Sheker. You're suggesting another idea, if you want to distinguish. I'm suggesting for Tosin Nida that the reason there's no distinction is either because Nogea is a car of the Atzmo, or, you know, it's like of the parallel opposite of what you're saying, but not a contradiction. Or because it doesn't matter that there are differences between these psulim, any psul has the din of Tchilas of Sofa B'Kashrus. Okay, so who actually says this? So look at the Yad Rahman Bav Vasra. This is... second... I'm trying to think what's worth to look at the first paragraph.
15,
24. What? This is on page 3. The Yad Rahman Bav Vasra. Starting from 22, let's say. Aval hechadav tchilasu bepaslus, kagonti zasi la sudim av shutfei, demaz min dvizan zavna, dechi zavna shutfei le travayu zavna, mishtakad av shas yedia, right, de paslus habe, afagav de sofa bekashras pasul, kin vivar reperkish nochlin, Gabe psul krovin. Then he adds, these are the key line, 24. Upsul nogea be'eduso, right, the psul of nogea be'davar, nami kipsul krovim dami. That's a key line. Like he's a karov li'atzma. It's like, it's based on Kurva. The kaimalan odom karov etzal atzma. Well, that's an expression that the Gemara uses to say that people, you know, can't be objective when their own interests are involved. Adam Karavetz Alatzmo. The Rama is using that melitza, that expression, which really says you can't trust people's judgment or their honesty or their objectivity, right, when it comes to matters that affect their own interests. He's using it in a very literal way, referring to the category of Karav, Karav Liatzmo. Right? The expression Adam Karavetz Alatzmo is not a problem for those who reject this view, is what I'm trying to say. It's definitely an expansive reading of what that phrase means. The kolshkein dehasam stama karmina ad shei tchilas of sofa bekashrus. What is that kolshkein? It sounds like he's saying both of the points I just mentioned before. So what he's saying is, number one, the din of tchilas of sofa bekashrus applies to nogea b'davar, right? Because he is a karov. And then he says, "V'kol shekain, the hasam stama karmina ad shei tchilas of sofa bekashrus, mash medahachadina v'kulo afilu v'kulo anfi de psula edus." Moreover, it doesn't sound in the Gemara like there's a distinction between the different types of psula edus. Meaning, and even if you disagree with me and think that this phrase is more of a melitza than it is a legal category or designation, you should know that the din of tchilas of sofa bekashrus applies across the board, no matter what the difference is. Teida, the Tamid Milsa, the Be'inan Eid, Ora Yada. This is interesting. After all, it doesn't say this in the Gemara, but this is his explanation, and it's based on the Rashbam as well. The reason that you need Tchilas of Asofa Bekasha is because the Pasuk in Shuas Eidos again, right, that one Pasuk, says, O in Eid, who, O Ra, O Yada, implying, Im Lo Yagid, Shehe Ra'ui La Eidos, Bein Bishas Yediya, Uri'iya, Bein Bishas Hagada, meaning that Eidos is defined by Ri'iya Yediya and Hagada. So if that's true, that you have to be an aid, Bishas Ri'iya, then even if there are differences between types of psulim, as long as you were not kosher, or as long as you were pasul, get that in a second, b'shas re'iya, you're doomed. Even if it's not like karov or pasul or rasha. V'haytama ki heichad shaykh b'shar psul achanami shaykh b'psul d'rogei ba'edus. So he's saying both need both explanations. V'raya brura b'hidigar sin and perikish makadish. We'll get back to that if we get a chance. But he also wants to bring a proof from the Sefer Torah. Look towards the bottom. Elalav, look line 36, towards the middle. Elalav shema min alkim d'tchilasim b'paslos avagav t'sof m'kashos p'sili. Teida, nami. Another proof of this. V'alkim akshina b'masisim b'nei ha'ir shenig l'sefer Torah shalahan t'tani Allah. The Gemara says, ain't done in. You can't have judges. That's what he's interpreting. B'dayane osa ir. They may be in rayim yanche osa ir. The Kamachina Mina, the Gemara says both. You can't have judges or witnesses from the city. Then the Gemara says, Kamachinan, the Shmuel, Amai, why? We have a solution. Bilisalku, Nafshayu, Betray Minayu, Velida Luhu. Let them renounce their financial part, and then they can be Dayanim. Says Rama, Midalo Machinan, Alamadiktani, Amabian Raya, Mian Shol, Sir, Vilisalku, Nafshayu, Betray Minayu, Vilisadu. Shema mina degabe edim modu Shmuel the chihavin chilasa bepasos habegav tzav bekashos psulim right the ilo te mahachi mida akshi dayanim de lo ayri bo Shmuel me edim de ayri bo Shmuel have other flak shuye how come the Gemara says right get two of them as dayanim they should have said get two of them as edim the Gemara there is mostly interested in edus. Obviously, they think Eidos is not going to help because it's because of Sofa B'kashras. But in Dayanim, there's no such thing. Ela mishum d'gabe Eidim mo d'shmuel d'tchilasam b'sofa B'kashras b'ina. V'hochi gabe b'nei ha'ir sh'nignu sefer Torah sh'lein kivin d'b'ina n'sahadi. You need witnesses d'misadi d'hai gavre gonvei havalei b'tchilasam b'pashras. V'hi shayta d'syada l'sahadi d'hai gavre gonvei akati lo istalik mina. They haven't yet given up their part. They have a portion monetarily in the Sefer Torah. That's a very fascinating Rama. Okay. And I'd say Rabbi Yona, others use this expression as well. So we have two shitas. The third shita is the Rimigash. In Bava Basra, very famous. The Rimigash says as follows, line 10. Ikashala chayid arminan kol shit chalasot paslas, the Sofa Bekashras Pasul, right? So the question is, how can you say Milisalku betray Minayu? Right? He doesn't think it's limited to Dayanim. Right? Maybe he's impressed with the tray, or he assumes it's asking about both. Right? Whatever. So what happened to the rule? Says the Rimigash, this is quite amazing. Ki Amrinan Tchilasa Bepasulus Avagav Desofa Bekashas Pasul Hechadai Pasulus Osya Machmas Krevus Opaslus Gazlan. That's if the psul is connected to being a karov, being a gazlan, umay the damile, or things like that. The havale paslus begufe de sahada. A psul begufa edus, or begufa edim. Meaning, a psul edus or psul gavra de edim. Avalhecha de leis be sahada paslus. Lo machmas krevus, lo machmas gazlanus. But when there's no psul gabra, ela machmas de kamatile hanami saduse, the problem is that he could benefit from his own testimony. Hu de lo mekablina le saduse. There's no psul gabra, but we will not accept. There's no kabbalah sedas. It's very beduyak language, but it gets better. Ki medachia hahumine mekablinan. should demand the mati hanav sadus la bar edus ninu bahu mil saklal. Because somebody who has a financial interest or benefit in a case is not somebody who is qualified for aid. He's not puzzle edus. He's just not qualified as an aid. He can't be an aid. Davadei lo masid inish lenafshe. A person cannot testify about himself, not because we don't believe him, not because he's a kar of liatzmo, because he's a baldover. V'leke alei shame aid klal. He doesn't have the status of an aid. Da'al pishnai medim yokum davar amrachmana. Alma inish legabe nafshe. A man with respect to himself, leke alei shame aid klal. This is a very lamdisha, paradigmatic ribigash. If he's not an aid, then he's not tchilas of apostolos. Right?
Yeah.
There's something you could still say about this. I'll explain in a second. Bahashta solik nafshe have a ikar ha'edus tchilas of asofa bakashras. Mikri. Avalagabi psul kravus o gazlanus, but a real psul aidus, kiv de gufa achrinihu, right? De lochozi la sude apostle mikri. He's called an apostle. Even if you can, you know, extricate yourself from that status later on, tchilos of apostles have it. V'lo have klum saduse. So this is the famous, famous Rimigash. Of course, there's still a flaw in tchilos of asofa bakashrus that you could argue. Do you need, if you notice, the Rimigash mostly is emphasizing there are really two different formulations in the Gemara Bava Basra. One is that you need tchilasa v'sofa b'kashrus, and the other is that if it's tchilasa v'paslus, it's pasul. So for the Rimigash, this is not a telzer, chakira. This is in this category, this is the issue. Really, it's not splitting hairs to say that for the Rimigash, there's no tchilasa b'kashrus, because he's not an aid. But it's also not tchilos of apostles, because he's not an apostle. Right? So, for example, again, the Rajbam, when he wants to explain the din of tchilos of the sofa bakashros, there in Bavasra, Kufkopcha, says, quotes the pasuk, who eid or rayada, our pasuk. Right? And then he says, because edus is defined by ri'ya. There's a general debate between the Rishonim regarding edus shabbatim tasabat lakulan, eid das and dayan, a few things. Rashi and the Rajbam, mostly, were of the opinion that an aid is defined by Shas Re'iya. And the most Bali Tosis and most Chachmei Sfarad, including the Rambam and so on, were of the opinion that a shame aid, Regabe, Aid of Shabbatla, and so on and so forth, is defined by Shas Agad, not Shas Re'iya. So the Rajbam, who happens to hold Shas Re'iya, is kind of saying you need tchilaso bekashrus because that's when you become an aid. Right? So if you ask me, I would say if you hold that like Rashi and the Rajbam, you need tchilaso bekashrus, not just tchilaso shelo bepaslus. But if you really think that the shame aid is born at the moment of Agada, just that he has to be, you know, not this Re'iya is also important, it's also a critical moment, so maybe it's enough to say that he's not pasul. He doesn't have to be kosher. For the Rimigash, he's not kosher, and he's not pasul. He's simply not a shame aid. Adam, you had a question? Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, from what I read here, once the aid gives up his financial interest, he becomes then retroactive.
Well, I don't think he doesn't mean that really. What he means is there's no psul, and therefore he's kosher. I think he wrote it that way because he's a little bit has a nagging problem with the last point that I just made, which is well, it's true it's not tchilas of apostles, but it's not tchilas of the kashrus exactly either. So I think he formulated it that way. I think that's a weak point.
So in the case of the who is in the Sefer Torah case and withdraws financial.
He said there's no tchilas of apostles. And therefore it has the din of Tchilas HaBakash. Right. Meaning, that's not what he said earlier, it's not Tchilas HaBakash. I'm not saying the logic of what he said doesn't... He formulates that because the Gemara has two... The Gemara in Bava Basra uses both phrases. When they talk about the Psul, they say, it's possible because it was Tchilas HaBakash. And then the Gemara says, because you need Tchilas HaBakash. Mostly, you know, we wouldn't pay attention to that minute difference because usually there's no daylight between, you know, kashrus and non-paslus or non-kashrus and paslus, right? But for the Rimigash, there is. And that's why he has a little bit of a problem with that. That's why I think you're picking up astutely on the right, on the line. I mean, I think your diuk is correct. I also think that it's a problem for him because that's not really what he's saying in the piece. But the reason he writes it that way is because he knows that for that language, I mean, you're totally right to pick up on that. But that's what it is. But we'll see in a second, the Rimigash says it again. Yeah?
Even if he takes away his financial interest, he's still interested. He wants the community to have a sacred Torah. They're going to have to buy another sacred Torah.
Right. So assuming, we're assuming that whatever that is, that's already beyond... You know, that threshold that we were talking about, which we'll get to a little bit, if I have time. If not today, then I can finish with this one. There's another Rimigash, which really beautifully captures this, although here he has two deos. It's based on the Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara has a case.
How can it be to feel less than cash?
Yeah.
By Nogay the dog, we say that he doesn't have shame made. He doesn't have shame because he has an idea.
You talking about the Rimigash now?
Yeah.
A Nogea is a Baal Davar, and therefore he doesn't have a Shem Eid. And therefore there's no problem, because
so
it's not Tchilas
of Bekashah.
It's not Tchilas of Bekashah. That's what I was just saying. That's what I was pointing out, that the one vulnerability that the Rimigash has is with all of his Lamdas, which is great, it's still not Tchilas of Bekashah.
Right.
So what you really have to say is that for him... You don't really need Tchilas HaBakashras. You need that Tchilas should not be Bapaslas. That's what I was kind of... And in the Gemara interchangeably uses those phrases, but since he kind of knows that, so you can see it bothers him a little bit, but in terms of what he's really legally saying, is that it's fine as long as it's not Tchilas HaBakashras. Yeah.
According to the Rimigash, that Tosfos can't be talking about Dayanus, because if he is not at the beginning... And he absolves himself from the Sefer Torah, the definition becomes an aid at the end, he can't be a dayan.
The Rimigash is assuming as a davar pashut
right,
that saying, the discussion of the Gemara is about aids.
Right, it can't be referring to a dayan under any circumstance.
Yeah. Okay, so there's another Rimigash, and it goes as follows. Gemara says, about a certain case, that you had somebody who sold their property to someone else, and there's a din Torah between. The someone else and the second someone else and the original owner who sold the property, he wants to testify. Or we want to know if he can testify. So the Gemara discusses, how can he testify? He's an Ogei B'davar. So the Gemara is weighing it back and forth. This is line 22. The Gemara in Bava Basra. The Gemara says, Idi Yisle Arachriti. Right? The Gemara says, well, he's an Ogei B'davar because even though he sold this property, the property could still pay off a debt of his as shibudim, as leaned, you know, property, because it used to belong to him. So it's in his best interest, you know, to keep this line of ownership alive. So if he has debts, they can be repaid, right, by this property. So he's an ogei b'davar. That's the Gemara said. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Is this the only property that is accessible for the repayment of his loans? But if he has other real estate, his testimony about this, you know, property that he claims he sold, is irrelevant because he has other means to pay off his own debts. So he doesn't need that. So it's not his agenda. Let's say he's so poor that he has no other means of paying his debts. This is it. So the Gemara says, my nafkala minei. So in the end of the day, who cares? Meaning, if they take this property, they confiscate this property, and he's able to pay his debt, you know, it's not going to change his lifestyle one way or another because he's not living in that property. He doesn't get any revenue from that property anyway, right? But By the same token, he can't pay his debts. So let's say they don't grab that property. Right? They're still not coming after him. So either way, he's insulated in a way. So the Gemara says, Le'olam de'leisei arachriti. Right? He doesn't have other assets. The Amar, but his cheshbon is, Lo nichali de'lava rasha v'lo yishalem. Says, I don't want to be, you know, he's a welcher on his debts. Right? People say, oh, Reuven, the guy who doesn't pay his debts. I don't want to be that guy. I'd rather my debts get paid, you know, even if it's through a lien. So the Gemara says, so v'gabi idak nami lo v'rosha v'lo yishalem. Whatever. He says, I sold it to the guy, specifically saying, if you have troubles, I'm not taking any responsibility. Fine. Anyway, the Rimi Gash asks the question, and that is as follows. See the next piece, number 26? Mm-hmm. We'll just get through this, and we'll just make a few comments next week, and we'll move on to Knas. Yesh kan lishol. Heche chayshinan, the edus sheker, he has a very powerful and simple question. He says, what are you worried about? The Gemara is talking about Nogea B'davar here, right? We're saying he's a Nogea B'davar. He wants the property to be established with this guy who he sold it to, you know, so his debts will get paid off if they need to get paid off, and people will call him a welcher, right? But I mean, he's a man of conscience. He wants his debts to be paid off. Says the Rimi Gash, what is more halachically problematic? That he's poor and he can't pay off his debts, so his debts don't get paid off? Or that he comes to court and he lies in order to establish, you know, that the other fellow gets his money back? Which is halachically a bigger problem?
The lie.
But Russia, the eight sheker, tvei chamer bi'olam b'Russia, the love of Russia, v'lo yishalem. V'lo ola la'ashkan de'kayra k'mona le'eight sheker, Russia. A liar, an eight sheker, is a Russia. The sivit, stikus ha'tzadik rishu, is a Russia. The kin ebedim zom me'kosim edaber, domar ulam inayin leidim zom min ha'torah, the sivit, stikus, the kim de'kayra k'mona le'eight sheker, Russia. Hecha chashinu de'kamasa de'edush. You're worried that he's going to lie, and therefore he's going to make himself he's going to make himself a Russia because of his reputation. This is really fascinating. He says, what will you say? This is all in his subconscious. He doesn't mean to lie. He's not planning on lying. But he has, you know, psychologically, right, he's going to be influenced, you know, to tell the story in a certain way because it benefits him. Halek lememer hachi. The chichai shinu leminta daite hainu milagabe dayana shudavar tali b'ri'ya slave, says the Rimi Gash. You're worried about his lack of objectivity, you know, him his being psychologically, you know, compromised. That could be the dayan who has to use his judgment. So you say, oh, you know what? But the eight just has to tell the story. He has to tell what he saw. Right? It's an interesting thing. We know today that, you know, all these neuro studies and so on, even perception sometimes is affected by a person's, you know, self-interest and so on. What the Rimi Gash is saying is unquestionably true, meaning there's a difference between, you know, the impact this has on a dayan, right, who's assessing and who's using his instinct and is drawing fine lines and subtleties and so on, and somebody who's just, you know, there to give the fact. But we know today that, you know, sometimes relaying facts can be complicated, and that can be compromised too. But otherwise, right, you have to he's influenced also the dayan. It's, they used to say, you know, just the facts, right? So that's something that Rimi Gash dismisses, which we might want to look at again, but that's his view. So, very strong question. How do you read this Gemara? The guy's reputation is, because of his reputation, he might lie. There's no comparison between lying and his inability to pay back his debts. So the Rina Gash gives two answers. One answer, based on the principle that Nogei B'Davar is a Chashash Sheker, but that people sometimes don't behave like Ishei Halacha, right? Sometimes their reputation, you know, in the eyes of their neighbors is more important to them than the extent of their violation to the Rabban Shalom. That's not good. We're not endorsing that. It shouldn't be that way, right? But in a real world, that's sometimes the case. Listen, the Yesh L'Hashem B'She'el Azu, Tadar Min L'Nichal E'Lahab R'Rosh V'Lo Yishalim, Lo Lo Tzei Sidei Shamayim, D'Lo Nichal E'Bahachi, D'Yim Yishu V'Dei Shamayim, K'Mid L'Esli Midi, Ma Yisla L'Meva. You're right. If you were measuring this halakhic, according to a halakhic yardstick, which is more, there's no question. This guy, he doesn't have money. He's an anus. It's sad that his creditor is not going to get any money, but no one's going to blame him, and he's not objectively subject to blame. Havale anus, the anus rachmana patre. So why should he even be motivated to lie? Elahaydelo nichale b'hachi lotsa sibri b'riyasu. He's worried about his neighbor, and he's worried about you know the business section of the New York Times. The kivin dechaz credit rating. The kivin dechaz he laid the love of the loy shalim korle rasha. Mishum hachi chayshino shem maaseh. The pressure of this will lead him to lie. Ki hechid lo lahav gabayu lo v'rasha v'lo yishalim. Right. V'lo ichpas lam v'rasha de'et sheker the layadi inchi. People don't know whether he's lying or not. Right? That's the first answer. What does that answer clearly state? It's a real politic, you know, answer. It's a pragmatic answer. It's also a lot of truth in it, unfortunately. But what's its principle about Nogei B'Davar? Chashash Sheker. Inami, the second answer, is in line with what he wrote a couple of dapim earlier. Listen to this. Yesh L'Hashiv. The problem with Nogea is not that we think that he's lying. Since he does have an interest in the case, he's not completely objective and detached. At least reputationally, he gets benefit from his testimony. That makes him a baldabar. He's testifying about himself. The loma kablina minei. Same words that he used earlier. The lav mishum dechashina ba'usadusa, el mishum dolo mikri aid plow. So I just want to finish with this. Look at the Rambam. I know we're over time. Just give me 1 more minute. You know, this way we can say Spiros Omer.
For which night?
Exactly. You know, we'll be Machmir on. You know. Okay. So, look at the Rambam, Perek Tezvav Halacha Aleph. Okay. Is it here somewhere? What page?
3.
3. Okay, we're in business. Kol edus shetavo hana la'adam mimena, edus which people derive hana from, right? Eino meid ba. He cannot testify about it if he's a beneficiary of the pleasure. Shezehu kemeid al atzmo. There's another great example. All year we've been seeing, because we have the Rimigash. By the way, the Rimigash from Abbasar, well, you know, is written in a different way. But, you know, we've been all year, you know, talking about the Rambam's relationship with the Rimi Gash, you know. And this is another great example of it. The words here, Shu Kameid Allah, are straight out of the Rimi Gash. Meaning, Enogei B'Davar is a Baldavar. Lefikach, therefore, that's why the Lefikach. Why Lefikach in the Rambam? B'nei Ha'ir Sheba Ma'arer La'ar Aleim B'merchatzo B'chov Ha'ir. If there's something in Torah about a communal, you know, property in the city, Einachon Mibale Ha'ir, Neid B'davar Zeh, below done, no judge, no testimony, Ad Shisalik Atzva B'kinyan Gamor, B'achach Yoid, Ho Yadin. But what do we see from what about Tzilas Osof HaBakashros? The answer, that's the Lefikach. That Tzilik will work. Why? Because he, like the Rimigash, thinks that no Gabadavar is just a, he's a Baldavar, he's not an aid. Okay? So we'll see a little more about this next time, Perikud Beis. I'm just going to finish with this and we'll do Knas, hopefully next time.